It is my pleasure to be able to introduce Congresswoman Donna Meachy. I got to meet her a couple of years ago when she was out on site here to look at our STEM program and our ROVs, which are underwater robots. And she was on campus for that, and it's fantastic for us, for our kids. I know that she is a huge supporter of education. I know that she is a huge supporter of the STEM programs, which are near and dear to our hearts here at Morgan High School. And so without any further ado, I introduce Congresswoman Bonamici.
Thank you so much. The microphones aren't working. Can everybody hear me? Okay, terrific. Well, thank you so much, Principal Hine. Thank you all for being here today at this town hall meeting, for spending part of your day here this morning. Engaged and involved citizens are really important to our democracy, and I really like doing these town hall meetings and hearing directly from the people I represent. I have wonderful staff here with me today. I can't do what I do without my staff. And I have several of them here. So will my staff, will you all raise your hands and wave so people know? My staff in my Oregon office, I have field representatives and they are here in the district when I can't be. And then I also have constituent caseworkers and they help with any federal issue, whether it be Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, IRS, immigration. There's a whole range of federal issues that my constituent caseworkers help with. So please do not hesitate to contact my office if you're having an issue with a federal agency or federal issue. So it is really an honor to represent this district in the United States Congress. I've been in this position now a little more than 5 years. It's all of Northwest Oregon, so it's all of Clatsop County, Columbia County, Washington County, Yamhill County, and part of Multnomah County. So it's very diverse, and I like that about the district. It is one-fifth of the state. And it's an innovative district, it's economically diverse, and I really am honored to represent it. When I'm in Washington, D.C., I serve on two committees. You heard from the principal, I have a passion for education, and I serve on the Education and Workforce Committee. Education is really what got me involved in politics and policy because I see education as the way to give everyone an opportunity for success no matter what path they take in life. And I've been pleased to work on that committee, and I am now what's called the vice ranking member, which is a leadership position on the Education Committee. I also serve on the Committee on Science, Space, and Technology, another really important committee when we look at our future and our economy. And I am the top Democrat on the Environment Subcommittee. And some of the things that thank you. And we still have a lot of work to do in that committee on environmental issues. But I'm happy to report that we did just pass the Tsunami Warning Education Research Act. That passed both chambers, and so that and a Weather Forecasting Innovation Act that I've been working on for a long time have now passed. I really understand the need, the resilience needs of a coastal community, and this is going to help get resources to our local communities to better prepare for and communicate how to prepare for tsunami. So I'm excited about that. Sometimes people think we don't get anything done, but we just got the tsunami bill done. And I'm expecting that to be, if it hasn't been signed into law yet, there's no reason to think it won't be in the next week or two. So I thought what I'd do would be to tell you what I've been hearing over the last couple of weeks from people around this district. So there's close to 800,000 people I represent, and they often are speaking up now. I tell you, there's a lot of concern among my constituents, and the top three issues that we've been hearing from constituents about in the last week or two. Number one, health care. Number two, budget cuts. And number three are the airstrikes in Syria. So that's what we're hearing from people about in the last week or two. Over the last month or so, there have been issues like Russia and conflicts of interest. People are very concerned about the new administration, and they're raising a lot of questions, and I have a lot of questions as well. Questions about conflicts of interest, questions about some of the cabinet officials who have been confirmed, and there's still a few who have not been. Questions about the executive orders that have been signed that have been harmful to our communities and our national security. You know, in a place like Northwest Oregon, where we have tech businesses and universities, those executive orders were really harmful to our region, but they also send a message around the world that doesn't help with national security. So I've been concerned about those. I've been concerned about a lot of promises that have been made without the policy to back it up. And healthcare is one of those. And I tell you, that was a challenging couple of weeks there when the healthcare bill was being debated. But although I must say that there were no hearings, 18 days from the time it was introduced to the time we were supposed to vote on it. So I was very concerned about that and what that would have meant for Oregonians. I'm always looking for policies that will expand opportunities, you know, look at working families and people who are still struggling. I spent part of my career working at Legal Aid. And when you help low-income families, you quickly learn that people don't struggle by choice. So I'm always looking for ways to deal with the opportunities for people, strengthening public education, which I mentioned, protecting our environment, which we know in Oregon we can do while building our economy, and supporting seniors and the vulnerable. And that experience comes a lot from working at Legal Aid and knowing that who we are as a community means that we don't leave our vulnerable or our seniors behind. So I'm going to fight against plans that will take those services away from the vulnerable. I'm very concerned about our immigrant community. As somebody who represents agricultural areas and tech areas and Latino communities, we have kids who are afraid to go to school. We have people who are afraid to get health care. That's not good for our communities. So I'm concerned about those. And I'm also extremely concerned about Syria and Korea and these international issues. These are very complex issues, and the president's positions have been quite erratic on them. And erratic is not a good basis for foreign policy. So we need a comprehensive approach. We need a plan. And if there's anything else that's done, the president needs to come to Congress. There are limits on what the president can do as commander-in-chief. Taking action, striking another country when we are not under attack and when there's no authorization from the UN Security Council is not constitutional. So the president needs to come to Congress and get input from the representatives from around the country about what is going to be the plan on these challenging issues. So I want to allow a lot of time for questions and discussion, but I want to know how many of you are here at a town hall meeting for the first time? Wow, that's incredible. Thank you. Thank you. We have seen a lot more people engaged. That's a good thing. It's a good thing for democracy that people are engaged and concerned and expressing their voices. And that's been really a hopeful thing to see how many people are asking what's going on and getting involved and getting engaged. So people speaking out has really made a difference. It made a lot of difference in the healthcare debate. When that started, and then people started going home and talking to their constituents and hearing, well, we really like being able to keep our kids on until they're 26, or we really like that we can't be excluded or denied because of a pre-existing condition. And we really like the fact that there people are getting preventive care now. And people are hearing that across the country. So the fact that people are speaking out is really making a difference. So keep it up. So I'm going to start calling questions. And I do this randomly. And it works pretty well. So I think what I'll do is skip the first three numbers, because the first three numbers are the same on every single ticket, as far as I can tell. Does anybody have a ticket that starts with something other than 672? Are they all 672? Okay, raise your hand if you have a ticket that starts with something that's not 672. Okay, awesome. Well, I'm going to skip the, you look like a bright crowd here, so I'm going to skip the first three numbers. I know you can do this. I've had more staff come in the room. Barbara and Adrian entered. Can you wave? We're having staff introduce themselves. Adrian's from Cannon Beach. North West Coast. Okay, so then the first one, and these are the last four numbers, 6462. 6462. Yes. Hi.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you for the things that you have been doing for us and taking care of our issues. What can we do to support what you're doing?
Thank you. I appreciate that. thank you. Keep speaking out. Sometimes people say, well, I know you support access to health care or addressing climate change, so I don't need to contact you. I really appreciate hearing from you, an email, a phone call. We track all of that, and that's what I know my constituents care about. So it was helpful during the healthcare debate, for example, to be able to say, okay, I had 51 people telling me that they thought I should vote for the bill. I had 3,989 people telling me that I should vote against the bill. Now, I don't decide how I vote based on, you know, weighing the number of yeses and nos, but it is incredibly helpful to know that that's something that my constituents care about. So keep speaking out, get involved in your community, let my office know what's on your mind, because it does help inform my decisions. And keep coming to town hall meetings. The next one is 6468. 6468. Hello.
But I'm not going to be right now. This administration, the Republican Party, is dismantling, destroying, and defecating on American values. I want to know, what is the Democratic Party, what is Congress going to do to stop this?
If we wait
two more years for the midterms, the destruction may not be able to be fixed. As a Native American, I am extremely angry about the continued dishonoring of treaties. Mm-hmm. The Dakota Access Pipeline, that is on treaty land.
Right, right.
I'm angry. I'm like a lot of Americans, I'm angry. That this madman is destroying all that is sacred in this country. I'm not hearing the outcry from the Democratic Party that needs to be said. Do we as a people, do we have to storm the castle with pitchforks and torches to stop this? We are on the brink of war on how many different fronts.
Right.
As we stand here right now, we could be lobbing missiles into North Korea. This is wrong. This entire administration is wrong. It's corrupt. The distractions to get us to look at something other than the Russian influence are costing lives. They will be costing more lives. I voted for you because I trust you to be my voice. I want to hear my voice loud and clear in Washington, D.C. I want no doubts that
Thank
my
you.
Voice is saying, get this madman.
Thank you. Wow.
Yeah. We need an EPA.
Absolutely.
We need Big Bird. We need science in our classrooms. Mm-hmm. This is what this country needs, and we are trusting you, a Democrat, our voice, to rattle the swords that we evidently can't. What are the Democrats going to do now?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your thank you for your incredibly passionate and heartfelt and meaningful words that I hear again and again. I share your concerns. I absolutely share those concerns. I was devastated the day after the election, and part of me just wanted to just put the covers over my head and come out in 4 years when the nightmare was over. But I can't do that. And so from day one, I've been speaking out as much as I can, every place I can, against cabinet appointments, against budget cuts, against the assault on science, against the assault on the environment, and doing everything I can to try to get an independent investigation, to get this out of the Intelligence Committee so that we can get the facts on what is happening so we can bring a case. And every opportunity I have, I do that. I've stood on the Capitol steps. I've stood on the House floor. I've signed on to pieces of legislation. I've called for investigations and every place I can, because I share your concerns. I share your concerns about the planet. I share your concerns about what is happening, as I mentioned, internationally. These are things that you can't reverse when the climate is being destroyed, and you can't undo a war. So I know that there are many people across this country who share your concerns. And, you know, people are looking back and how in the world did we get here? Why did this happen? And there's a lot of questions being asked. I know that while this is an official town hall on the political side, I know that the party leadership is working really hard to try to analyze and move forward. But you're right. We need to do something right away, and that's why all of these steps are being taken to move the investigation out of the Intelligence Committee. I mentioned that. We are on a I thought I mentioned that you mentioned the budget and the cuts to the EPA and public broadcasting and all these things. Let me just say the president's budget is the administration's statement of values and priorities. That budget is sort of the opposite of Oregon priorities and values, because it invests more in defense and more weapons and less in basically everything else. That's backwards of what I hear from Oregonians. We absolutely need to keep our country safe, but we don't need to buy more weapons. We just need better investments in cybersecurity and intelligence. And on all those things you mentioned, we need an EPA. We absolutely need an EPA. Think back to what our air and water looked like before the EPA. So we have now a bipartisan climate solutions caucus. They're actually Republicans who believe in climate change. They don't happen to be running the science committee, but there are some. So we're fighting those efforts with policy, but we're also fighting to try to get the investigations. There's a big march today to get the president to release his tax returns, because that is going to show what these... You know, it's basically unheard of that a president in this day and age does not release tax returns. I mean, that's, we need to know, we need to get to the bottom of all these investments, because it seems like every day there's a new revelation. So I want to reassure you that where there are places that I can speak out, I'm doing that. Where there are efforts to try to get more investigation and an independent investigation, I can do that. And your presence here, I know this is happening with my colleagues across the country, and it is making a difference. I wish it were happening more rapidly, but do know that it is. Like with a healthcare bill, it made a difference. With a budget, it's going to make a difference. The Congress's responsibility to write a budget. Not the presidents. There are still three separate and co-equal branches of government. I want to assure you that. I mean, the president doesn't tell Congress what to do, and not doesn't tell the judicial branch what to do. So there are still three branches of government. So your voices are making a difference. And I will keep speaking out. The 6476. 6476. Yes.
My name is Irene Van Deen, and I live in Warrington. And I'm concerned about the condition of our health care system. And I'm wondering if you are seeing any opportunities for the Democrats to work with the Republicans to save Obamacare, for lack of a better word. Are they reaching across at all for ideas from the Democratic side? Or are they just shoving everything through?
Well, what happened with the health care bill, first let me say, health care is critical. It's critical for people to have access to affordable health care. I worked on that when I was in the legislature. That is something that we, as one of the wealthiest nations in the country, shouldn't have to even question. That should be available for everybody in this country. I wasn't in Congress when the Affordable Care Act passed. But I talked to many, I was in Salem at the time, but I spoke with many, many people who worked on that. That was a lengthy process. They worked very hard to get input, not only on both sides of the aisle, but from stakeholders, from, you know, patient groups and hospitals and providers, and worked really hard to build support. And then there were 79 hearings in the House and a lot of hearings in the Senate and a very long process of considering amendments. Unfortunately, it ended up as a party line vote, but there was a great attempt to bring people together to try to get the best they could. Then Senator Kennedy died, and they lost the majority in the Senate, and so it passed, I mentioned, on a party line vote without being able to work out some of the differences. So there's been a commitment, certainly on my side of the aisle all along and since I've been there, to sit down and talk about sort of the Oregon way. How do we make this better? How do we improve it? How do we make access better and drive costs down? And we're seeing some really positive things. I just heard from our Clatsop County commissioners, from our CCOs here in Clatsop County, and I know in other places of the state where there are access to preventive care and coordinating care with primary care and dental care and mental health care and vision care and working with early childhood, we're seeing healthier communities, and that's very, very positive. What happened was that a lot of people over the last several years, my colleagues on the other side of the aisle went out there and said, we're going to repeal Obamacare. And then now they're getting back home and they're finding like, well, their constituents don't really like Obamacare, but they really like the Affordable Care Act, right? And it's funny, but it's kind of sad because they're the same thing. But people are hearing that, well, they really like that they're getting the preventive care. They like that they can keep their kids on until they're 26. They like that the ban on pre-existing conditions, that's a pretty big deal. If somebody wants to go to a new job or start a business or all these things that are benefits of the Affordable Care Act, they're hearing from their constituents back home. So they're trying to figure out, how are we going to rewrite this thing? And then they started, here was the time frame of this American Health Care Act, because they were trying to fulfill these promises that they made on the campaign trail. 18 days from the time it was introduced to the time we were supposed to vote on it. 18 days total. No hearings. There were a couple sessions where they were considered but didn't accept any amendments. And then 18 days till we were supposed to vote on it. It's no wonder it didn't have the support, because people were hearing from their constituents, like I'm hearing from you, that we need to make this better, but we don't need to make it worse. And that bill would have made it would have been more expensive, less for more, pay less, get more, and really hurt a state like Oregon that has done the Medicaid expansion. So it's no surprise it didn't pass, and they started negotiating with this Freedom Caucus, which are the anti-government people, and then they were making changes that made it even worse, and they got more of the moderates. There were a lot of Republicans who were saying, I'm not going to vote for that. So they pulled it off the floor and we didn't vote on it. So all these people like you who are going and telling their representatives, all those voices made a difference. Are they going to stop working on it? I don't think so, because they promised they were going to repeal Obamacare. Now, if they want to repeal Obamacare and keep the Affordable Care Act, if they can figure out a way to do that. But my point is that I've always been ready, willing, and able to sit down and talk about what we could do to make this better. And so have my colleagues. There, as far as I know, no attempt to reach out to Democrats when they crafted that bill. The next question is 6486. 6486. Hello.
Is there any existing set procedure to examine the mental health of the executive?
There's
I mean, like an independent mental health exam or anything like that, or does he get to pick his own position?
There's some provision under the Constitution, I think it's Article 25, Article 25 that I know Congressman Blumenauer has done a lot of work on that. The chances of that happening in the short term, I think, are slim. But there's been a lot of questions raised about the erratic behavior and some of the lack of ability to concentrate on long term, make a plan, those sorts of things. So I know that there are people looking into that, into that particular constitutional provision. But I also know that some of the advisors there's some that are a lot worse than others. One of my favorite signs at the Women's March was, "I've seen better cabinets at IKEA," but. I think we're dusting off old provisions of the Constitution and trying to figure out how we can approach this, because there are really serious concerns raised. And frankly, I think people around the country are saying, well, even if they supported the president, they're saying, well, wait a minute. He said he was going to do this and he did that. And he said he was going to do that and he did this. And he's been all over the place. And so I think people are really starting to question, what does he stand for? What does he have any core values, and what is he going to do? So 6454. 6454. And it's kind of hard in the dark, but I can see you. Hi.
Thank you very, very much for serving in that chaotic situation. I just honor you.
Thank you.
And thank you very, very much. You're probably getting postcards from me, would I just say dump Trump. That's all I can say is dump Trump. But anything, it bothers me that he takes his the visitors, like from China and other countries, to Mar-a-Lago, to Miami, and where he has security at the White House and security at Camp David, but he's millions of dollars it takes that is costing our country.
Correct.
That he takes down to Mar-a-Lago. And I can't understand this thinking of this man. I know no one can. It's bad. I mean, it's bad. And I'm worried about the bombing and all that situation. I had something else I wanted to say, but I can't remember what it was.
Well, thank you. And I know a lot of people have raised that concern. I mean, somebody in a office like the presidency, of course, needs to have protection. But he has protection in New York, and he has protection in D.C. And I have a colleague who represents West Palm Beach, Florida. And I tell you, it's a mess down there. People can't drive. They can't get to where they need to go. And there are security concerns as well down there. It's not a secure facility. I think they increase the what people have to pay to belong. There's just a lot of questions about the security of the place and the expenses. So I share.
I just want to say, he said, "I'm going to make America great again," and I always thought America was great.
America is great. Absolutely, America is great. And we're going to fight to keep it that way. 6487. 6487. Hi.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And also for someone who lives in the tsunami.
Thank you. Thank you.
Also, I'm a surfer. I live right here on the north upper left edge, and so I'm also worried about climate changes that can be happening. And one of the ways we keep track of that are by our satellites in NASA. And can you say how you're helping to protect NASA's budget so we can keep having the satellites that, it's not just climate change, they protect our weather.
Of course.
Right,
right. Thank you, and absolutely. I think you'll see that there's tends to be strong bipartisan support for NASA. I also am a big supporter of NOAA, and I'm extremely concerned about the cuts that are proposed to NOAA and the Coast Guard, which makes absolutely no sense to cut the Coast Guard. So yes, I'll be working hard as we're approaching the budget process to make sure that that those satellites, and that's something I worked on in the Science Committee. And that's something that the Weather Forecasting Innovation Act addresses. There's some opportunities for some positive public-private partnerships with some of the satellite companies. We wanna make sure, it also strengthens the communications between the Weather Service and the research, and it's just going to be some positive changes there. But with NASA, there tends to be a strong bipartisan support for that. Again, the president's budget is the administration's statement of values and priorities, not mine and not Congress's. So as we approach that process, I will be fighting for that funding. And also share your concern about climate change and how climate change is affecting our coast, our state, our planet. And we in Oregon, just yesterday I was in a Montgomery Park, which is in Northwest Portland. They just did this big project where they're going to produce massive amount of solar power. They put solar panels on their roof and on their garages. A big project, and it was real positive, and they're going to save a lot of energy costs. We know here in Oregon that we can grow our economy with renewable energy, and there's thousands of jobs in renewable energy here. But when I think about things like ocean acidification and how concerned I am about that, I am the co-chair of the Bipartisan Oceans Caucus, and that's something that we have identified. I've been talking about it in the Science Committee for a long time, but the Science Committee is challenging right now. And I mentioned there is some positive news that there's a Bipartisan Climate Solutions Caucus, it's an equal number of Democrats and Republicans. It took me a while to join because I had to find a Republican to bring with me before I could join. And the first five or six I invited were already members. So, but we're up to, I think, 24, 26 members now, and we're reviewing legislation that we can support on a bipartisan basis. So just one piece of positive news. And there are also 17 Republicans who filed a Republican resolution saying we need to address climate change in a way that grows our economy. So there's a little glimmer of hope. It's not coming from the Science Committee, though. We just had a hearing where they had three climate skeptics and one climate scientist. Raise your hand if you've ever seen John Oliver's with Bill Nye, the science guy, and how you need 97 Bill Nyes because 97% of scientists agree that humans contribute to climate change. So it's something I care about a lot for the health of our oceans, for the health of our economy, and for our planet. So let there be light. All right. I might switch over to the microphone. The next one's 6458. 6458. 6464.
Actually, my question's already been asked, but I do want to thank you for your hard work. It can't be easy. I don't want to get out of bed in the morning, and I don't have to face some of these people who I'd like to punch in the face. So thank you for getting up. Thank you for going to work. And thank you for
appreciate that.
In Portland, it's a female voice that answers the phone when I call in to register a complaint and
thank you. I appreciate that. Kind of get this turned on. I'll let Allie work on this. Here, we don't work on it. I appreciate that. Like I said, I had one wonderful staff who help keep me going, but it's really the people I represent who keep me going. As I mentioned, it's a challenging time, but it is really an honor to represent you, and I know how important it is right now, so that's what keeps me going every day. So, 6475.
Yeah, this is only the second town hall I've ever been to. One was for Berkeley a few years ago. And both times I've gotten picked in the lottery.
A lucky man. Thank you.
Hey, anyhow.
This is Adrian with a microphone, so we can hear. So now you can hear. Oh, wow, that's really loud. Good. You do a duet.
My name is Jeff Donnelly.
Hi, Jeff.
I'm in Astoria. I don't know if I really have a question or just something I'd like to say is, you know, you watch Republicans do stuff, and they're all pounding their fists, and everybody's getting all jazzed up. And it always seemed to me like Democrats, well, okay, we'll talk about this in a nice, mild manner. Well, I'm kind of in agreement with what General Patton said one time, is if you want to get somebody's attention, say it loud and say it dirty. Well, you don't have to necessarily say it dirty, but, you know, I want to see some fire out of the Democrats.
Yeah.
You know, it's like not heads on the right, you know. Watching the Tea Party people, you know, several years ago, it really bothered me because my wife and I do historical reenactments, and I've got a flintlock rifle. And I thought, you know, these people look like a lot of the people that we do stuff with. And I know some of them are, but then it gets me thinking about, well, you know, yeah, the founders, they kind of knew about flintlocks and single-shot muzzleloaders, and that's kind of what they had in mind, I think, when they were talking about the Second Amendment. And if there's any hunters in the group, God bless you. You know, I don't hunt myself, but if you want to hunt, that's just dandy. I don't know why you need a 100-round magazine to go deer hunting. If you're not that good a shot, maybe you ought to find a better out. But anyhow, I guess the whole point of this is I just want to see some fire out of the Democrats. Some fist-pounding, jumping up and down, screaming, not, well, we'll work on this in committee, and, you know, we'll try to, you know, they don't understand this.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And I mentioned that, you know, I'm there fighting. I'm not afraid to speak up. I'm not afraid to speak out. But I found that I still want to get policy done, like the tsunami bill. Screaming about it doesn't help. So I'm going to focus when I'm on the policy side on doing what I need to do to pass that policy. But at the same time, whenever there's a place to speak out and to speak up, I'm doing that. And I know that my colleagues are across the country as well. So if it's not loud enough, you can help. It's your voices that help amplify it as well. So thank you. Yeah, and it is going to be the movement of the people, truly. 6474. Adrian's running over with the microphone.
I am really worried about our Hispanic friends. It is giving me so much heartbreak. I told some people last weekend I went to several stores here in Astoria and Warrington, and I saw one total of Hispanic person in the stores. We really got to do something about this. We got to help them. A lot of them don't go to grocery stores. be a citizen. And it's just not right, you know. If I think of myself having to hide in my house, not being afraid of going out of my house, being arrested all the time, oh my God, you know, we shouldn't do this to anybody.
Thank you. I share your concerns, absolutely. And most of us, I know we have our Native American friend here, but most of us are, my grandparents were immigrants. Most of us came from immigrants. Immigrants helped build this country, and we are who we are because of the contributions of immigrants in this country. I'm extremely concerned about what's happening in this administration with the ramped up enforcement, with the Attorney General's priority of ramped up enforcement. Representative Boone, thank you for joining us. Good to see you. And there have been times when, you know, I mentioned I was down in Yamhill County recently, speaking with the Latino community there. And the woman who directs the organization down there for the Latino community is she's a doctor and a reverend. And her perspective was that the kids are going to have some long-term psychological damage from this. These are innocent children who were either born here or brought to this country when they were babies. And why in the world would we do something that would hurt these innocent children? The DACA students concern me. So there have been times we just helped get the DACA student out of detention, the one who was recovering because he needed surgery. He was put up there without his medication, without his wheelchair. The executive orders, we helped get the baby here from Iran. That to me was unbelievable that she was turned away to get surgery here in the country. We helped with that. And then I have also partnered with a colleague from New York, Representative Espaillat, who's the first undocumented immigrant to become a member of Congress. And we introduced something called the Protecting Sensitive Locations Act. We want to make sure that people can go to places like schools and health clinics, places of worship, and courthouses without fear of being arrested and detained. And this is, thank you, because this is about the safety of our community. One of the judges said, ICE can do its business elsewhere. There's only one place where people can get justice, and that's at the courthouse. And if people aren't reporting crimes, if they aren't getting protective orders, you know, I heard about 4 domestic violence cases just being dismissed in another state because the survivors were afraid to come forward. That, given free passes to domestic violence abusers, is not okay with me. So we need to work on making sure that our immigrant community feels safe in these places, to push back on the ramped up enforcement and keep fighting for comprehensive immigration reform, which is something that passed the Senate when I first got there, but not the House. I mean, this is, as you mentioned, something that, you know, these are humans. They're members of our community. We need to treat them with respect and find a way to give them a path to citizenship. So I hope we can get back to that comprehensive immigration reform, which we desperately need. But in the meantime, I hope we can get this Protecting Sensitive Locations Act passed. It's actually based on current guidance for Department of Homeland Security, but they're not really following it right now. And it's creating a lot of fear. Kids aren't going to schools because they don't know if their parents will be there when they get home. I spoke with some school administrators, and they said on like the conference night, Latino families aren't participating. They're not coming. They're afraid. That's not good for our communities. It's not good for those kids. 6445.
6445. Hello. My name is Deb Vanoss, and I live in Washington. You mentioned our voices make a difference, and we really appreciate that. But can you tell us specifically, if you had to name the top 3 things that all of us can do when we wake up every morning and realize who's still our president, what are the top 3 things that will be actions that we can take?
Thank you. Well, one of them is to keep contacting my office so that I know this is happening. When I talk to my colleagues from across the country, it's really making a difference. Get engaged in your community. Go to community events if you haven't already been engaged. Get more engaged in your community. And then build new bridges. Find new groups to get involved with. And amplify your voices. That's a good way. I was yesterday, Allie and I, where's Allie? She's still here. Allie and I were at the Oregon League of Conservation Voters dinner yesterday, and they had this Reverend Yearwood, he's the hip hop caucus guy, but he talked about engaging people primarily in the environmental movement. But he was telling this story about back when Nixon was elected, and everybody thought, President Nixon, he's not really an environmentalist, right? But you know why it was President Nixon who signed a lot of the environmental laws, the Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act? Because people sort of rose up, and that was the time when all these different organizations, the Union of Concerned Scientists and League of Conservation Voters and all these groups were formed to let people's voices be heard. And that really made a difference. So it was a sort of historical example about why it's important to speak out, amplify your voices through other organizations, and stay in touch with my office. Thank you. 6467. 6467.
I see you have good taste in color.
Hello, thank you so much for coming here.
You're
and
welcome.
Joining us. And I'm sure I'm not the only one that spends a lot of time being stressed out and angry. And this is the best way, I think, for us to not take care of it, but to lower the stress level. And my question, I'm sure, will affect a lot of people. It looks like, you know, war might be inevitable. Who knows? Is the draft going to be instituted, reinstituted?
I don't know about the draft. I haven't heard any talk about that at this point. I have to say, you know, I grew up in the Vietnam era, and you know, for those of us who were there then, you know how stressful that was. But there's also people who say that if there is a draft with very few exclusions, it's a lot harder for people to support. You know, if members of Congress are pushing the button on the yes, we're authorizing military force with the knowledge that their kids or their grandkids or their nieces and nephews or brothers and sisters might have to go to war, it really changes the perspective. So there has been, over the years, an effort to bring back the draft. I prefer to take the approach of avoiding war myself. But when you look at the and I want to mention in that regard that the I'm really concerned about the proposed cuts to the State Department, because we need diplomacy, right? I mean, diplomacy, democracy, those are development. Those are ways that our country can avoid war. And when with the cuts to the State Department, a lot of the top level people, with the institutional knowledge have left. The State Department has not been staffed up yet. So I'm concerned about that. But my preference is to avoid going into war. I mentioned earlier that any effort, if the United States is not directly attacked, Congress needs to have a say. So that would be my approach, and I haven't heard anything about the draft. I do think that the volunteer military is, you know, you get people joining the military because they can't find a job, or they don't think they're right for college, but maybe they don't really believe, and so it's a tough thing. Again, my preference is to find ways to use diplomacy, democracy, and development and avoid going to war. 6256. 6256. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I'm new to Oregon. I've only lived here 20 years. So I'm going to limit my question to local. Coming from California, we had the most beautiful orange groves, bean fields turned into housing. And I look around in Washington County, and in this area, and there's a migration of moving to Oregon. And mm-hmm. I'm just hoping that for the young people, who are going to be coming up, is there a plan on maintaining our agricultural land and our environment while we grow?
Thank you, and you know, Oregon is known for that. Land use decisions are made at the state and local level, but you know, here in Oregon, we do have a lot more land use planning. We have our urban growth boundaries, we have metro, we have a lot of things that don't exist in other states, and we have planned. There are ways to do smart, sustainable growth. I thought you were gonna ask about housing, which there is a slight federal role in housing. Again, housing is gonna take a federal, state, and local effort. It's something that really requires investment at the federal level. The low-income housing tax credits are critical for housing developers to build low-income housing. There's a great one in Washington County, the Orchards, largest passive house structure in the world.
Here, a young college graduate. Mm-hmm. On their own in the next 20 years, that puts them past age 40. So when I ask that, you know, what is that?
Well, I know that Oregon does do, a lot of the land use issues are state and local, not federal, but housing can be done in a sustainable way, planning can be done in a sustainable way, while we preserve our, agriculture is a pretty big part of our economy in this state. So. 6446.
Right here.
Hi.
My name is Tiffany Mitchell.
Hi, Tiffany.
This has been an issue for me for a long time, just as a hypothetical, and it actually happened to me. My dad, who lives in Maryland, got into a really serious bike accident last week. Had several broken ribs, fractured neck, vertebrae, and a partially collapsed lung. He cannot take care of himself, and his doctors, we're trying to get him to get moved to a rehab facility because he can't take care of himself, and the insurance companies denied him. So we're going to go back to healthcare with this question. My personal opinion, when I look at the biggest barriers between patients and access to healthcare, is not necessarily the doctors or overregulation. It's a lack of regulation of the people who make those decisions. An insurance company can tell you that they're going to deny you move into a rehab facility to get the care you need or a surgery that you need or any of those. And part of that is that cost folks are charging a whole lot more than they probably should because the insurance companies will pay for it. The ACA doesn't seem to address those root causes. And so in moving towards a solution to better, more sustainable, accessible healthcare for everyone, are you going to propose legislation at some point in your career that might address those, or how do you feel you can fix that?
Well, thank you, and insurance regulation is critical, and there was quite a bit of it. And first of all, Tiffany, so sorry to hear about your dad, and I hope he's okay. If you get your contact information to us, we can get you in touch with whoever your dad's representative is, and maybe they can help. But you shouldn't have to call your member of Congress to get the health care you need, to be honest with you. It makes no sense. So again, the Affordable Care Act wasn't perfect. A lot of it was insurance regulation. That's what the essential health benefits were. Again, sorry to hear that about your dad. There is pending legislation in Congress to talk about a public option and a single payer system. Yeah. We need to have that conversation. So we need to have that conversation because I think if anybody were in, you know, starting a healthcare system from scratch, they wouldn't have the system we have right now. So I hope we have that conversation sometime.
Where do you stand on single payer?
I've signed on to the bill. 6391. 6391. Hello.
I'm Annie from Gearhart.
Hi, Annie.
The first thing I want to say is thank you for your passion and your sanity.
I appreciate that.
I'm passionate about education, and Betsy DeVos scares me to death. And I'm afraid for our public schools. I grew up in the 50s. I think Betsy wants to take us back to that mindset of the 50s when, and I don't blame my parents for this, this is just the way it was. My brother's education was at Cap and Gable, and then they paid for him to go to Wesleyan to college. My sister and I were told that the college dollars were reserved for the boys who would have to raise a family and support them. So I went to night school at Portland State University. I don't want Betsy DeVos to create a situation where public schools do not educate our young gals today. I care vigorously about the young women today and do everything I can of my time, energy, and money to help young women, because in my estimation, the college degree that I got through night classes is what enabled me to be a homeowner in Guermark today.
Thank you so much. Well, we've come a long way, haven't we? But not with this education secretary. I spoke out, talk about speaking out. I was downtown at a rally to oppose the DeVos nomination, even though I don't have a vote. I'm not in the Senate. I joined Senator Merkley downtown before that vote to oppose Betsy DeVos, I think the least qualified of all of the cabinet secretaries. And as somebody who cares passionately about public education and the opportunity for public education to give everyone a path regardless of what they want to do in life, the federal role in education is about equity and opportunity. You may know that most public education is funded through state and some local funding, but the federal government got involved in the 60s as part of the civil rights movement. And it was about making sure that low-income students had opportunities that were more equal to more affluent students, and that's where Title I funding came from. And then the federal government also has the Individuals with Disabilities Act to make sure that students with disabilities have additional funding so that they can have a more equal opportunity. When that law, the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, which was the civil rights piece, when that became No Child Left Behind, that created a pretty big problem because it put way too much focus on what was tested rather than a well-rounded education. So we were able to change that, to rewrite that. I was proud to have a large part in that, and Adrienne was my great staff assistant on that. And we passed a law, the Every Student Succeeds Act, that puts more focus on well-rounded education, fewer better assessments, and more local decision-making at the state and district level. But with this new education secretary, we've already seen attacks on public education. And her plan, along with the Trump administration plan, is to give students vouchers and take money away from public school and give them a voucher and say, here, you can use this voucher to go to a private school or a religious school. Well, there's a lot of problems with that, especially in rural areas. Anybody hear from Jewel? I mean, you get somebody, you say, oh, well, we're taking away some of your funding, but we're going to give you a voucher to go to another school. There's no other school. And in the
reservations don't have private schools.
Right, exactly. Reservations don't have private schools. And we have a lot of work to do to help with education services on reservations for our Native American constituents as well. But I'm hoping that we can build support to fight this privatization plan from our rural colleagues. And it wasn't surprising to me that Senator Murkowski in Alaska voted against Secretary DeVos, because when you look at Alaska, it's not like a voucher is going to do anybody any good in Alaska. The school is often, you know, the heart of the community, and there's one school, and it's where the kids' parents went and their grandparents went, it's offensive to say to somebody, here's a voucher, you can go use this to choose another school somewhere else. My responsibility as a policymaker is to say, we need to improve schools for everybody. And Betsy DeVos is, thank you. No, her experience in public schools was as a philanthropist, where she'd go pick out a student and help, you know, pay for them to go to a private school. As a philanthropist, that's very different from as the education secretary. Her responsibility is to every student. And instead of picking students out if the school isn't working for that student, how about we make that school better for everybody? I have 6479.
It's mine. Does anyone want it?
You already had one.
I know. I've given it to someone.
Oh, 6479.
I gave her my card.
Oh, okay. I was trying to figure this out. What's happening?
I wanted to chime in. I don't know what Bugsy said. The specter of war hangs over us like the sword of Damocles at this moment. I just this morning watched about 1.5 million North Korean soldiers marching past their dear leader. And those people, they frighten me. And the fact is, the game theory and the physics of their current reactor and weapons program means they do have hydrogen weapons. And they aren't under any treaty obligation to limit. I mean, we're talking salted munitions. We're talking cassava cannons. We're talking the full range of nuclear power at their disposal and their willingness to use it that they have publicly stated.
Yeah.
If they detonate one of those hydrogen bombs over Portland, the energy from the blast will set the asphalt on I-84 in the Dalles on fire. We are playing with an extreme situation that, in my opinion, is worse than the Cuban Missile Crisis, and we need to do something about it. And
Thank you.
You know, it comes back to the White House or.
Right.
The place in Florida, wherever he's at. It comes back to the president. And the situation we're in is, it's got to be something about it.
Thank you. And, you know, we have a president who had no government experience and no military experience for the first time in history. And I truly hope, you know, fortunately we get Bannon's out of the Security Council. The political operative had no place in the Security Council, and I truly hope that some of the more reasonable advisors, although that's a pretty low bar for more reasonable than Bannon, but I hope that they could sit down with the president and have a heart-to-heart conversation with him, because I don't think he understands the consequences. I don't think he understands what he's doing, whether it be through tweets or statements that he's making with China. With, you know, it's terrifying that he doesn't have a plan. That, you know, he launched those missiles into Syria without a plan. Now, it was easy for him to say, okay, send the missile. This is deplorable what happened to the children. Of course, we think what was deplorable what happened. But to send missiles over there with no plan is so wrong. And I share your concerns about his lack of knowledge of the consequences of the history, of the complexity of the region. And truly hope that, you know, we were able to get Bannon out of there, but I hope that the National Security Council can guide him in a way that goes back more to diplomacy. How do we address this with that? Somebody had to take away his Twitter account. And, we only have time for one more question. But I do want to say that if I did not get a chance to get to your question, please give your contact information to any of my staff members, and we will get back to you as soon as we can. 6456. 6456.
I'm so delighted. Hi, I'm Mary Beth Cottle. I live in Cannon Beach, and I have been activated by this recent political situation. I'm running for office here in Clatsop County.
Good for you.
I hope I can count on everyone's support there for Clatsop Community College Board. Thank you. I have so many questions, but mostly it really is boiled down to how long must we endure this untenable situation in Washington?
Well,
I have so much fear, anxiety, apprehension, and I know I'm not alone. Fear for loss of health care, fear for loss of jobs, fear for loss of our environment,
fear for my grandchildren's future, fear for my children's future, fear for, I can't even begin to list the things. How long must we endure before this situation is rectified?
Thank you, Mary Beth, and I wish I could answer that for you. There really isn't any way to tell, but I will tell you that on those issues, healthcare, we're making a difference. We stopped that bill. The environment, we're going to fight the cuts to the EPA. We're going to work through the bipartisan caucus to try to make sure that we are moving forward. And I mentioned the concerns about security and democracy and the international issues. But how long, I just don't know. It seems, as I mentioned, it seems like every day there's something new that we read or hear about in the press that calls us to, again, try to get the independent investigation, the conflicts of interest. And I'll tell you, it's not just Democrats who are worried. There are Republicans who are very concerned as well about the future of the country, the priorities of the president. They're not as outspoken as the Democrats are, because oftentimes they're afraid of being challenged, you know, in their districts. But there are bipartisan concerns about what's happening. And the more we hear, the more dangerous the country seems, the more fear people are hearing from their constituents, the more expedited this could be. I just can't predict. Again, keep your voices out there. The positive is that there's so many people engaged now, people speaking up, and it is making a difference. You know, Flynn's not there anymore. I mean, there's just been so many things that people have spoken out about that have really made a difference. And I'm going to have to close because I'm going to do another town hall in Scappoose.
What can we do about Citizens United?
Citizens United, let me just close with that. Citizens United was one of the worst Supreme Court decisions ever decided. And it, unfortunately, Congress can't change it because it was an interpretation of the Constitution. But the money in politics and the undisclosed money in politics and the super PACs are really creating a problem. The only way we can change it is through a constitutional amendment or through a Supreme Court that reverses it. So,
write letters.
Yes, you can write letters, but also you can get engaged. And back to Reverend Yearwood, who spoke last night, the way to overcome that is through citizen engagement and speaking up and speaking out, because we're going to get to the point where, and voting, you could get to the point where it's not going to make a difference if somebody comes in and spends a couple million dollars against a candidate. If that candidate doesn't stand for your values, that candidate should lose. So keep it up. Keep speaking out, keep speaking up, and get engaged. So, and I have to run to Scappoose, but thank you very much. Stay and talk with each other.